Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for December 24th, 2007, and on this episode we have an interview with playwright and composer Greg Opelka. He will be talking to Tom Williams about his show, Marrying Terry, now playing at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is an old friend of mine who is a musical comedy writer, but he has something new, and his name is Greg Opelka. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Tom.
Tell us about this terrific new play you have, Marrying Terry. And first thing is, it's not a musical.
It is not a musical. So it's a play.
So you are now a playwright, besides being a composer and lyricist.
Yes, I have ventured into the, for me, previously uncharted waters of writing straight plays. And it's been a really fun challenge, but the show, just to repeat, the title of the show is called Marrying Terry, and it's a New Year's Eve comedy all set at the Drake Hotel here in Chicago, of course, on New Year's Eve, and it features a cast of nine, and we're producing, it opened last night at Victory Gardens Greenhouse, and we run for 6 weeks until the end of January.
Great, and it's a New Year's Eve comedy, so it's not a Christmas show.
It is not a Christmas show. We have the, I hope, unique distinction of being one of the few holiday shows around this season that is not a Christmas show.
Well, that's great, because we get a little Christmas out.
Yeah, I thought, well, you know, that wasn't really my motivation in writing the show, but it was a fun, or sort of a bonus that it is not a Christmas show. But really, the New Year's element is a fun, or I shouldn't say fun, but it's a, well, it's fun, but it's also a, it gives you a nice theme of new beginnings.
So give us enough information now. Give us a little gist of what we can see when we come out the Victory Gardens Greenhouse to see the show.
Okay, well, without giving away some of the surprises in the story, Marrying Terry tells the story of a rare books librarian named Terry Adams, who works at the American Library Association, and she has booked the last room available at the Drake Hotel that evening. There's a massive blizzard has paralyzed Chicago, and all the rooms in the entire city are already occupied. And she's booked the room for her long-distance boyfriend, who's flying in from Boston, and she's hoping that and expecting that maybe tonight will be the night he actually asks her to marry him. And then catastrophes ensue, and that leads to the rest of the show, which I can't spoil for you. And
no, it gives us some of the style, because when I saw the stage reading back a year or so ago, mm-hmm. I mean, I was laughing all the way through it. It was really clever. But it reminded me of those classic comedies of the 60s.
Well, I'm someone who remembers those comedies of the 60s, and I'm a big fan of some of those great. Well, Neil Simon, of course, is one of my heroes, and loved all so many of his plays, even his very first one, Come Blow Your Horn. But and other movies of that ilk, of that era that I like are Cactus Flower, for example, that have these wonderful situation comedies with great scripts and witty dialogue. And you know what Marrying Terry really is, and the style of comedy that this is it's a situation comedy where the people are very normal people, average everyday people, accountants, doctors, lawyers, librarians.
One's a radiologist, right?
One is a radiologist, and they're caught in a very unusual situation. And so the people are, you know, this is not camp. It's not farce, although there are a little few farcical elements in the show. But it's really just situation comedy, romantic comedy. And I think it also, because of the New Year's, it'll have that that feeling of a New Year's Eve magical tale, and but with everyday people.
Well, one of the things that I appreciated about it was you got a chance to use your wit in more than just songs. I mean, there's some really clever bits in here, and some nice dialogue. That I mean, it's a hoot.
Well, thank you, Tom. I hope that audiences that see the show will feel the same way. We opened last time. We had a wonderful opening, and the audiences were laughing throughout. And but as I said, I am a student of some of the greats, like Neil Simon. I've always admired the conciseness of his dialogue. I mean, it's really, when you read those great Neil Simon comedies, and it's the one-liners.
Yeah.
And I'm also...
And the setups. He'll repeat it at the right timing of... Well, without going too far, he won't beat it to death, but he'll take a bit or a situation and as it reoccurs, and there's not a wasted word, and that's what I saw in your show, not a wasted word.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, the callback, the whole idea of you introduce some, there are many callbacks in Marrying Terry. There's a device that comes back in another form, and the audiences will of course see this. They don't necessarily analyze it the way we do, but anyway, I love those writers. I also, there are many others whose names I can't think of right now. But it's like the Nick and Nora movies too. Same thing. The banter, the repartee, and these are sort of our version of star-crossed lovers. You know, the people. It's hate at first sight, and how hate at first sight gradually becomes love. And of course, there's no. The surprise isn't how it ends. I don't think there's ever any doubt, but how we get there. It's the journey that
the
we
journey,
take.
Yeah.
That's the fun part, the ride.
And good writing should be that way. These aren't mysteries.
Correct.
Like
yeah.
I've heard people say sometimes on a comedy, they'll say, well, it was expected what happened. Well, that's not the point. Yeah, it's how they got right, how they got
right.
There and the crazy adventures and what they had to go through to get there. You
yeah,
know?
I've always... I suppose maybe in mysteries or thrillers it's different, but in comedies like this, whenever people talk about predictability and they say, "Oh, that was predictable," well, that's not the point. Predictability is fine, but what you don't predict, what you can't predict, is how we get there and all the twists and turns that happen along the way. And that's Marrying Terry has its share of complications, and even though everything takes place or most of the action takes place in the presidential suite, there are plenty of twists and turns that occur along the way.
Well, tell us some of the cast members, because I know you have this is a full equity, pretty much of a full equity show.
Well, it's not full, but it's a mixture. The majority of the cast is, AEA, Actors Equity members. We've got a wonderful cast, starting with the radiologist, who's played by Dan Rodden, a wonderful modern-day amalgamation, of Cary Grant, Dick Van Dyke, Don Knotts, a whole host of comic Jerry Lewis. He's really a brilliant comic actor, and he's worth the price of admission alone. And then
he is terrific.
He's a great actor.
Yes.
And Anna Svirutsa, who is playing the librarian Terry Adams, who's quite wonderful. And I could go just to name the others: Ron Keaton, Chicago veteran character actor, who was also in various readings of my Singing Cowboy musical, a different show we may talk about later. Mary Mulligan, with whom I worked first 17 years ago in my musical Charlie's Oasis, and we are finally reunited, I'm happy to say. I'm missing Ron, Mary. Oh, Debbie Loman Blanc, who's a new face to me and a wonderful actress who is playing the role of Janet, the CPA, the best friend of Terry. And just a wonderful little wind-up toy ball of energy. So, and then we have some actors who are new faces to me, Paul Peroni. These are some of the non-union members of the cast.
Yeah, he's excellent, yes.
Fine young actor, Kimberly Downs, Steve Ruppel, and a non-union actor who has worked on several projects of mine before, a wonderful character actor named Brian Simmons.
Yes, Brian is...
Who recently also played Jerry Springer in the long-running Bailiwick production of Jerry Springer, the opera.
Wow, so you've got quite a cast. What you're known for? I mean, you're... when you don't halfway do it, and that's one of the things everyone appreciates, not only the quality, but you do it first class. You're in the main stage at Victory Gardens Greenhouse.
We're in the downstairs main stage. It's a 200-seat theater. It's a beautiful theater, no obstructions, no great sight lines. I love the space. I love it so much. This is where we did the first readings
of the
show.
That's right. I was there, yeah.
And when we were scouting around for a place to produce the show, this is an independent production by people who believe in the show. We just love the space so much, we came back here. And back to your point about the cast, I'm only as good as the people who are saying my words.
And your director?
And my director is my beloved, longtime collaborator, Suzanne Avery Thompson, who also, those of you who may remember 5 years ago, my chanson musical, La Vie en Nuit.
Oh, I do. It was marvelous. That's where we met.
That's where we met. That's correct.
Right.
That was choreographed and directed by Suzanne Thompson, and she did a wonderful job. And we just really worked together beautifully. And I actually think people that see Marrying Terry will find the show perhaps more choreographed than directed. I mean, there's so much movement, so much she's opened up the play, and she has just a phenomenal sense of.
Well, that's an unrated thing in a comedy. In the great Neil Simon shows, all had that they really wasn't movement. It was really choreography, and that added a lot to the humor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. This, we're in the presidential suite, and we've got, we've got a bedroom and a living room, and that's it. But you'll be amazed with how much happens all over the stage. And it's, I love Suzanne. She's been both an actor, a director, a choreographer. Actors really love working with her for that reason. And so we're glad to be. I'm really glad to have her.
Great.
And she also directed the readings, I should say. So she's been with the project.
She's been with the project, okay.
As have the two leads and Mary Mulligan, who played Penny.
Well, let's talk about, after all the musicals you've done, I mean, your career has been pretty much as a composer, lyricist, and you've worked with other book writers, and some shows you've done your own book.
Only one. La Vie en Nuit.
La Vie en Nuit, okay. And actually, you've done arrangements and played in some of your shows.
Well, La Vie en Nuit was the only show that I actually performed in.
Okay.
But I have orchestrated my other most of my other musicals, not my first one, but then I orchestrated all the subsequent ones, The Three Musketeers, Hotel d'Amour, my Monkey Business shows, Soup du Jour.
Which I love. Soup du Jour is one of my favorites.
I enjoy Soup du Jour as well. It was a really fun project. Again, that had, Soup du Jour and Marrying Terry both, in my opinion, have the same kind of composition of character. They have smart, I mean, the people are still everyday average people. They're, waiters and newspaper reporters, but everybody was smart in that show.
Yes, they were.
And in this, in Marrying Terry, it's really the same thing. They're educated people. And so, they're fun to write for because they can be witty.
So tell us now the challenge of doing a straight play, a comedy, without a music. I mean, the whole structure, the whole concept is different. Mm-hmm. And you had the chutzpah to step into that area, which I greatly admire, especially when you pull it off.
Well, I'm telling you, don't think for a minute that I wasn't scared out of my mind when I started, but I also felt. I just had this feeling that this show would work as a play better than a musical. Not that it couldn't be a musical, but I really felt like it could be one of those like crackling dialogue plays. And so I thought, well, why not give it a shot? I forget who said, but it's you got to come out of a different hole every time. And so I thought, why not try it? What's the worst that can happen? And so I wrote. My first draft of it in January of 2005, and we did a couple sit-around-the-table readings, and I felt like there was enough good stuff happening that we could go ahead and then go for these public readings, which we did later in May.
Yeah, and then when you did some of these the public readings, you brought in top equity actors, not only to make it look good on stage, for like backers and so forth, but they were acting it out because they can't help. They weren't reading it. They were actually playing it.
Yes.
And They must have given you some pretty good feedback because you have people that have been in, you know, shows all over.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I had, you know, and I love this cast. This is a
very
phenomenal cast. But, yeah, we had in the original readings, I had people, Chicago veterans like Heidi Kettenring, Neil Friedman, and, of course, Mary and Mulligan, who's still in the show. But we had a great cast. Ironically, most of them, Sean Krill, that's right.
Yeah, Sean Krill, yeah.
Most of them, maybe not so ironically, were from the musical theater
world.
It was a bunch of us slumming, is the way I like to think of it. Here we were, like, we took off our musical theater hats, and here we were in the world of straight theater. But that brings me to a point. I feel like musical theater actors are... an actor's an actor, and a musical theater actor has the same, the ones I've worked with often, I have the same incredible timing and comic ability and that the straight theater actors have. So, and many of them, of course, do work in both worlds. So,
yeah.
So I thought, well, why shouldn't I work in both worlds, too?
But, so this was quite a challenge for you. Yeah.
It was a challenge. I mean, there are obviously writing a musical is all about... driving to the song. You drive the dialogue to the song, then the song takes over and gets to do the kind of the glory work of whether it be a ballad or a comedy song or a scene, musical scene. But, you know, in a way, music gives you a lot of it gives you a lot of help. There's, you know, you take that safety net of the music away and suddenly all you have are words.
That's true.
That was the challenge. And I realized that, you know, you have to make these, there are moments in the script that really are the equivalent of songs, whether they be speech or a heightened moment. And somehow you have to get to that same level you would get in a musical. You have to do it with prose. And we'll see if
it's almost reverse engineering. You know how they take like the Goodbye Girl is going to be produced coming up in the next few weeks, which wasn't originally a comedy. Then they set it to music. So you almost kind of went backwards, except you never wrote music for it.
I never wrote,
your mind, you almost had to like reverse engineer it.
Yeah, it was unusual, especially at the beginning. You know, when I was writing the first few scenes, it was very odd to be, well, first of all, I'd written dialogue for La Vie en Nuit, but that, again, that still was a musical, so there were songs. So, but it was very strange to just be writing a scene knowing I could never stop and just go into a song. We're not going to do that. So,
I think one thing that may have helped you is in some of your musicals, you have some very witty, funny, you know, you write terrific, funny songs.
Oh, you're speaking my lyrics.
On your lyrics, yeah.
I do write songs. I'm a songwriter, but I was first and foremost, as a child, I was a poet. I wrote poetry. I was a big poetry freak. Other kids were playing softball and baseball, and I was the nerdy guy in the basement reading Keats and Donne and Edna St. Vincent Millay, who's still my favorite poet. But I've always, you know, lyrics and poetry have come easily to me, and I enjoy. And my first big hero in musical theater was Cole Porter. So I always loved to write, you know, to try to write a really funny song.
Just, you know, I made the comment about Soup du Jour, saying it reminded me of a Cole Porter, as if it was a Cole Porter play that someone found in the bottom of a trunk somewhere. That was the style you wrote it in.
Well, I'll take that compliment.
Yeah. A lot of people. I told one friend of mine, I kind of tricked, who doesn't go to theater a lot, but it's seen some of the Cole Porter's dice. This is an old Porter play. And he believed it until the review came. And he said, why'd you say that? I said, because didn't you believe it? He goes, yeah. I said, well.
That's funny.
Yeah.
In a way, the writing, I mean, I did employ the same, I guess, test, which is, you know, I want these words. Some of the same rules apply, I think, when you write dialogue or writing lyrics, which is you're still writing for a character, and the character has to be able to say those words believably. You know, you can't have for example, in this show, the character of the librarian, she's much different than the character of her best friend, the CPA. They're just, one is much more diffident about worldly things, and the other one is very confident about worldly things. And so you still write the words that person can say. You just don't have the meter that you would have in a lyric. And
how do you mentally get in? Do you become each character to write them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I enjoy that. I mean, I'm not an actor, but I guess you're sort of a de facto actor because you have to. And when I write, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this the other day. When I write songs, when I'm writing a song, that is, I usually get laryngitis by the end of it because I keep singing the melody, you know, and with mm-hmm. the words I'm writing until I know once I'm satisfied, once it feels right and comfortable and natural, then the song is ready. And when I was writing Marrying Terry, I would recite the dialogue. I would say the dialogue out loud because it had to feel natural. And I always...
And you had to have the audio...
Yeah.
Sound, the timbre, and
just
so forth.
The rhythm.
The rhythm.
I mean, I've always felt like with my lyrics, I go for naturalness as much as wit. Obviously, you want to be fresh, and with lyrics, things have to rhyme, of course. But really, I found that the main thing, you want to be true to the character, and you don't want to say anything or have the character say anything that's going to... leap out as not in character. It would be jarring. So I found with Mary,
and of course, it wouldn't be funny either.
And it wouldn't be funny. And so I found myself saying the words out loud. And yeah, becoming each character. It was very helpful. And
how long did it take you to write this show?
I wrote most of the. Really, a good portion, maybe 90% of what's still in the show, I wrote in those 2 months in January and February.
Wow, that's terrific. That's pretty fast.
Well, you know, I think you work. I've always worked best in short, you know, concentrated spurts of inspiration, and then there have been changes. There's actually a new scene that you won't have seen until tonight.
Okay.
A brand new scene, and then a lot of fine tuning, just saying no, that line doesn't work, that joke doesn't work. Actually, in the rehearsal process, the actors often ask questions that I wish they hadn't asked, because then I had to go and fix something. But ultimately, I was glad they did.
You're not a control freak in it. You're part of the creative process. You realize that actors, the directors, lighting people, they all contribute to the final work.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not. I hope I'm not a control freak. I mean, obviously, I do want. I guess ultimately, the author has the control. But I want to listen to them. If they're really having a problem with this line, maybe there's a problem with the line. Maybe they're having a problem for a reason. And why? If it's in my best interest to make it work, so I want to listen to them. And sometimes. There were even times when they wouldn't say anything, but I could tell by the way they were maybe either stumbling over the line or just wasn't coming out with the same sort of confidence or vigor of some of their other lines. And I thought, and so there were more than one occasion I went up to Mary, for example, whom I know from Charlie's 17 years ago, and she's a wonderful actress, and we have a great rapport. And I just said to her, you know, Mary, you don't really like that line, do you? And she said, no. And I said, well, let's look for something else.
Okay.
And every time that happened, it turned out to improve the work.
Improve the work.
Absolutely.
So your advice to a young playwright would be to what? To make sure they listen to the other people in the process?
Sure. This goes back to why you get great actors working. If you can, get great, talented actors working on your work, because they're the ones who will find those problems. They're the ones that are either going to ask the questions, or they'll have some sort of innate or instinctive reaction that'll tell them, hey, I'm having a problem with this. So, and you get those people, and you don't ignore that. Their talent is telling you something, and if you can listen to it and make the change, it'll make the work better.
I agree with that solid advice, because we've all seen works where, you know, it just doesn't work and no one's comfortable with it. And then you find out there's usually either a dictatorial director or a playwright that won't let them change one comma.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that many times can spell disaster.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. When I write musicals, when I write a song, it's obviously I'm writing for the... Ultimately, I'm writing for the audience. I'm that, you know, I don't write for me. I write for the audience. I want to please people. I want to entertain them. I want to elevate them. I want all those things together. But I learned long ago that my first the first person I have to please is the actor. If I give an actor a song that they love to sing, they're just going to sing the hell out of it, and they're going to perform the hell out of it. And it's the same with dialogue. It's no different. And so my first job, in a way, is to please the messenger.
That's interesting, because I've interviewed a number of playwrights, and you're the first one to emphasize that. But I do agree with you. And you've seen I've seen the difference. It happens so often that people write for the actors, and the actors buy into it. But boy, when they don't.
How can they play something they don't believe in? And so that's why, for example, that Jerry Springer, the opera, we were talking about that earlier, and one of our actors, I don't know if I mentioned this already, was the lead in that. But you could tell, you could sense the love they had of the piece. They were having the time of their life.
That's right.
And in Marrying Terry, too, our actors are just having the time of their life. And that energy cannot fail to be transferred over to the audience.
And so, that's what we come to theater for, to experience that.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, we're here to see a story unfold before us. But the people that are telling the story, they have to love telling it as much as I loved writing it. And that's why you get the best people.
By the way, folks, if you do hear, occasionally hear a little noise in the background, we're in the control booth. At Victory Gardens Theater, because this is really an on the spot interview.
It is. We're on site, and this is where the sound and light magic happens.
Yeah, we're at all, and which I think is cool. Okay, Greg, let's go into your background now.
Okay,
you've given us a lot of insightful information about the theory and how you write and how you approach a show, and I think a lot of young writers are going to be fascinated by it. I know I've learned something. So let's hear your background now, because you've got quite a background.
I've done a few things. Not traditional. I did not take a traditional path to becoming a playwright, that's for sure, nor a composer lyricist. But you mean my college?
Yeah. Well, your background, some of the shows you've done, because you've got quite a book of. You're not a brand new beginner. You've got a long history and some great shows.
Well, just a kid with a dream. But I. I've written 8 musicals, all original. I should say I've co-written, but I've written the music and lyrics for 8 different musicals. My first was 1990, Charlie's Oasis, which was done at the Theater Building. It was the very last show produced by Byron Schaefer, who unfortunately passed away during the run of my show. No relation, no connection. But no, unfortunately, he died of a heart attack, and it was a very sad thing. But I later... I wrote a musical version based on The Three Musketeers with Warner Crocker, Hotel d'Amour based on Flea in Her Ear, the Feydeau farce with Jack Helbig. And then I met these guys named Todd Mueller and Hank Boland, and we wrote 4 musicals together. We had a blast writing together. We wrote Monkey Business, a sequel to Monkey Business, Soup du Jour, which you spoke of, and our largest show is a Wild West shoot-'em-up called The Singing Cowboy, which is a tribute to the old Singing Cowboy films, and a show that we're actually still looking for the premiere of.
Okay, you still haven't produced that show.
No, it's had some amateur productions, and it's been in several, what do they call it, festivals. But we're still, it's a big show. It's going to take some backing. I mean, money specifically, but
How can anyone contact you? Because every once in a while, an angel listens to these podcasts. Because I've heard the score, I think it's a hoot.
Oh, great!
I'd love that. I was kind of seeing a few things, and I could see it really being a terrific show.
It's a mainstream crowd pleaser kind of show. I mean, who doesn't like tumbleweeds and bank heists and. Women wearing spurs and cowboys singing to their horse.
Yeah, that's true.
It's got everything. To contact me, you can go to my my website. My own company is American Playwrights, and that website is www.AmericanPlaywrights.com. And you can also find my works represented on Dramatic Publishing's website. And right now, while the show is running, you can also find me on marryingterry.com.
Well, one of the other shows I really liked that you did, it had a pretty long run, was La Vie en Oui.
Right, La Vie en Oui.
And tell us about that and the news that you just heard.
Yes, La Vie en Oui is a very quirky show. I like to call it my chanson musical. It's a two-woman show. It's set in a fictitious cabaret in 1950 Paris, where two rivals of the great Edith Piaf, the great French chanteuse, are working in this dingy cabaret, and they are forced to sing Piaf songs every night. They're like essentially like a French cover band. And the plot is that on this one night the play takes place, they pay off the owner, the police, to detain their owner so they can sing their own repertoire. And it basically is it's kind of a female buddy picture sort of musical about these two down at the high heels chanteuses and their travails both in their career and with men. And it's a quirky show. It's really an unusual show, but it has had several productions subsequently around the U.S., a handful, and also around the world. And actually, coincidentally, last night, Marrying Terry opened here in Chicago, but La Vie en Nuit, under its other name, C'est la Vie, opened in Alicante, Spain, just tonight.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
That's good news.
I knew it was coming up, but I got so distracted with this that I didn't realize it was tonight until I got an email this morning from the director over there, a man named Pedro Montalban.
Okay. In about a minute or so we have left, tell us, you went and produced shows in Russia. Give us a quick little what that's about. I know you learned speak Russian because I heard you talking on the phone a few minutes ago.
Yes, дорогой друг мой там. That means good friend for those of you. I didn't say anything bad about him, I promise.
Okay.
But no, I didn't produce shows, but I've had shows of mine produced there. My first musical, Charlie's Oasis, was picked up by, of all things, a Siberian producer. Yes, and we spent November and December in beautiful Omsk, a city of 1.5 million people, where our show was produced in this 1,000-seat theater, all in Russian. And that began for me a 5-year sojourn in my life where I went to Russia every year. I had my Three Musketeers musical produced there, and it ran for 4 years in Yekaterinburg, another city which has a fantastic theater. And I also conducted two American musicals there, Kiss Me, Kate, and Some Like It Hot, the musical, all in Russian. And it was just...
So through the course of this, you didn't speak Russian, but you learned it.
I learned it, yeah. I the first year, I just learned a few phrases. It's a difficult language, but I enjoy languages. And I made a point. I knew we'd be going back, so I made a point of really trying to learn it. And by about the third year, I got pretty good enough to the point where I could conduct. So I conducted my own show, The Three Musketeers, and then later these two other shows.
Do you have plans on going back?
You know, I'm going back this February, but I don't have plans to go back to work at this point. You know, I had to make a decision about it was an unbelievable experience there, and I love it, and I love the people. I have many friends there. But it sort of interrupts your career here, and I felt like I needed to focus on what was going on back home.
Okay.
And, you know, home is always where I'm a Chicagoan. This is my hometown, and I wanted to be here and get...
Well, and you're one of our treasures. And the show is Marrying Terry. And give us a commercial. It runs at Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater. What days of the week? What are the times?
Performance is Wednesday through Sunday night, Wednesday through Friday at 8, Saturday at 8:30, Sunday actually afternoon at 3 p.m. It's a really fun... show. It's the surefire champagne way to ring in the new year.
Yeah,
have a great time.
And to my knowledge, you have the only New Year's Eve comedy going on.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. This has been great. And remember, folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 24th, 2007. Profiles Theater continues its 2007-2008 season devoted to the works of Neil LaBute with the Midwest premiere of This Is How It Goes. Directed by Profiles Associate Artistic Director Daryl Cox, the production starts January 14th at the Profiles Theater. This Is How It Goes tells the story of Belinda and Cody, a typical Midwestern couple, and the battle for Belinda's affections. Neil LaBute explores the ways in which the wild card of race is played by both black and white in America. This particular version of the play received its world premiere at the Donmar Warehouse back in May of 2005. That production was directed by Moises Kaufman. This Is How It Goes is the third production of Profiles Theater's Season of LaBute, which included Things We Said Today and Some Girls. Tickets for This Is How It Goes are currently available. For more information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Raven Theater continues its silver anniversary season with the Chicago premiere of the United States Theater Project's Columbinus. The show was written by Stephen Karam and PJ Paparelli, who was recently appointed the new artistic director of the American Theater Company. Jeff Citation winner Greg Kolak is directing the production. Artists with the United States Theater Project conducted interviews and research in order to create this two-part piece, which contains the factual events that led directly to the school shootings at Columbine. Columbinus seeks to ask more than just why, but perhaps more importantly, why do we treat each other the way we do? Columbinus opens on Sunday, January 27th at the Raven Theater. For more information and for tickets, visit www.raventheater.com or click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News website. The Silk Road Theater Project has announced their 2008 season, which will include two Midwestern premieres and one world premiere. One of the productions, in fact, is being produced in association with the Goodman Theater and will be directed by Steve Scott. Subscriptions and single tickets are currently available at srtp.org. Again, that's srtp.org. For more detailed information of the Silk Road Theater Project's 2008 season, the season which Executive Director Malik Jilani calls their leap year, for more information, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Pegasus Players will be kicking off the new year with its 22nd annual Young Playwrights Festival. This is the festival where Pegasus Players professionally produce four selected one-act plays written by Chicago teenagers. This year marks the program's 22nd annual showcase, which makes it a Chicago tradition and the oldest of its kind in the country, celebrating over 20 years of giving voice to the budding playwrights within the city. Of the 5,000 participants and nearly 1,000 playwright submissions, four winning plays were chosen to debut on the Pegasus stage. Congratulations goes to winners Laura Fernandez, Molly McAndrew, Claire Richlewski, and Sarah Winter. The 22nd Annual Young Playwrights Festival starts on January 4th. Tickets are currently available online at pegasusplayers.org. Again, that's pegasusplayers.org. Or for more information, click on over to, you know the website. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Twelfth Night, Act 1, Scene 1. If music be the food of love, play on. So that is the close of another merry week. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Greg Opelka for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.